Common Ground.
"So sorry I'm late," said Orso, striding into the room. The table was set for a royal dinner, silverware gleaming. "So much to do, you understand? Well, of course you understand. You've an army of your own to manage, and bigger even than mine. Don't get up."
Hildy struck a match and began to light the tall candles as Orso trotted over to offer his hand, smiling hugely. His mother had always told him it was important to smile, especially at your enemies. Brock was not much changed, every bit the chunkily handsome storybook hero that Orso remembered. He had grown something of a beard, but then he probably grew a beard between breakfast and lunch, even those bits at the corners of the mouth that Orso could never quite get to come through. Frozen uncomfortably between rising and staying seated, Brock looked at the proffered hand with an air of puzzled disgust, like a man who had rolled over to find a turd in his bed. Then he reluctantly reached for it.
"Not too firmly," said Orso. "Remember, I'm no warrior."
When Brock's hand gingerly gripped his, he gave it as bone-crushing a squeeze as he could manage, and was mildly gratified to see him wince. Small victories, perhaps, but Orso's father had always said one must take all the victories one can get. Brock gestured to the two men he had brought with him, standing grimly against the wall.
"These are my aides, Antalp,"
lean and handsome, with that slicked-back black hair which somehow always let a rakish lock or two drop over the forehead,
"and Whitewater Gin,"
a rugged, red-bearded Northman who looked to have been opening doors with his face most of his life. Orso grinned at them, too. Grins were free, after all.
"Are there any small Northmen? I've never seen one."
"We keep 'em at the back," growled Jin.
"Lucky for them. I'll be at the back myself if it comes to fighting, I can promise you that. Hey, Tunny?"
Tunny gave an approving nod.
"Well in the rear, Your Majesty."
"How about you, young lion? You'll be leading by example, I dare say."
"I dare say," said Brock stiffly.
"Corporal Tunny and Colonel Gorst, you know, of course. And this is Hildy, my..."
Orso frowned. "What the hell are you, Hildy? My butler? My jester?"
"You're parasite," she said, as she lit the last of the candles and neatly wafted out the match. "I'm only here till you pay what you owe me."
"For the fate's sakes, you know I'm good for it."
Orso gave a weary sigh as he dropped into his chair.
"But that's being king. Everyone wants a little piece of you. You'll find out if you win."
Brock paused with mouth open, then gave a kind of grimace, as though he had realized the only way to get that turd out of his bed was with his fingers.
"We don't want to depose you, Your Majesty."
"Please don't majesty me. It's faintly ridiculous at the best of times, but with armies in the field, it's positively absurd. Let's talk like equals, like friends, just for tonight. I imagine tomorrow's events will necessitate a whole new relationship between us in any case."
Brock grimaced again as he pronounced the name.
"Orso, then wine?"
asked Orso, and Hildy ghosted forward with a cloth over one arm and tipped the bottle towards Brock's glass.
"Not for me." "I hope you won't mind if I do. It's a very good Osprian. Maybe your friends would like to..."
Whitewater Gin looked as if he might be on the point of accepting, but Brock jumped in first.
"My friends want the same thing as me, to avoid a battle if we can. That's why I'm here."
"You're invading Middleland to avoid a battle? Couldn't you have simply stayed loyal?"
And Orso took a noisy slurp from his glass, regarding the Lord Governor of Angland over the rim.
"Loyal?"
Brock stared back at him, ever so slightly pale.
"No man was more loyal than me when Scale Ironhand attacked the Protectorate. We leapt to the Dogman's defence, never considered anything else. We were outnumbered, but we fought even so. We knew we had the Union behind us. We knew help would come any day."
He looked over at the steadfast standard, chest swelling with pride, as if the damn thing really was made of gold rather than just gold thread.
"Back then, I would have followed that flag into hell."
Orso swallowed uncomfortably. This story was making his wine taste somewhat sour.
"But all we got from Middleland was well wishes," said Brock.
nobly disappointed. And empty promises, and endless demands for taxes. Do you wonder why there wasn't a man in Angland who wouldn't follow me here? His voice was growing louder and louder. Self-righteousness suited him. We fought your war. Men died. My friends died. I nearly died. My leg burns with every step and stinks like a shithouse floor and will never heal. Brock smashed the table with his fist and made the cutlery jump. And all because you sat here on your fat asses while we fought for our lives. Orso felt Gorst shift as the echoes faded and he held up a calming hand. The room was very still. He had to admit he had never felt more respect for Leo Dan Brock than at that moment. He was a man one could envy, a man for whom everything was simple, and he had a good claim to being the injured party. It was a shame it had come to this. "You make a very good point," said Orso. "No doubt it will mean nothing to you now, but I find it hard to describe my utter shame and disgust that you were sent no help. I did try, in my own rather useless way, something of an irony that most of the men I field against you now are the ones I raised to help you then. But the Breakers rose up in Valbeck, and I had to fight that fire first. And then, well, you know what happened at Red Hill and afterwards better than anyone. Suffice to say, you managed without us. The closed council let you down. My father let you down." He took a hard breath. "I let you down. But is this really the remedy? Insurrection? Treason? Civil war?" Brock glared across the table. "You left us no choice." "Really? Because I don't remember anyone trying to talk to me about it. I know we have our differences, but we both, I think, believe in the Union. While there is still time, can we not find a way to satisfaction without the deaths of so many of our countrymen? Can we not find some common ground?" "Perhaps," said Brock coldly, "if you were to dismiss your entire closed council and replace them with men of our choosing."
"And taking a wild guess, you would choose yourselves?"
"We choose patriots!"
shouted Brock, thumping the table again, but with less conviction.
"Men of quality!"
Moving away from the sun-drenched uplands of anger and into the shadowy thickets of politics, he was rather less impressive.
"Men who can, well, take the Union back to its founding principles."
"But whether a man is a patriot, or for that matter, of quality, all depends on who you ask, doesn't it? Our current predicament makes that abundantly clear, if nothing else. As for principles, it was Baez who founded the Union, and he's still on the closed council when it pleases him, in spite of my best efforts. You should spend some time in there. You'll find your most proudly rigid principles turn shockingly flaccid. The first of the Magi can stretch them until they fit around any outrage, believe me." Leo Dan Brock's impressive jaw muscles worked, but to little result. He really was no philosopher.
"We have the numbers," he grumbled. "You have to surrender."
"Well, I'm no general, but I believe, technically speaking, I could fight and lose. Put yourself in my place. Would you surrender?"
Orso could almost see the wheels turning behind Brock's eyes. Plainly, putting himself in someone else's place was not something he did often, was not something he had the equipment for. Perhaps it was fortunate that Hildy barged in at that moment with a gilded tray in her hands, two bowls of Suljuk porcelain steaming on top.
"Aha!"
Orso whisked up his spoon. "My cook is called Bernil, and I know they say nothing good ever comes from Tarlins, but I swear her soup will change your mind." Brock frowned down at his bowl, then over at his friend Antaup.
"Oh, come on, I'm not going to poison you."
Orso leaned across, dipped his spoon in Brock's soup, and sucked it dry.
"Now eat up, there's a good fellow. There are excuses for high treason, but letting Bernil's soup go cold is bloody unforgivable."
Probably it was great soup. If kings don't have great soup, who does, after all? But Leo was in no mood to enjoy it. He felt angry and worried, and with the sky almost dark outside the narrow windows, like he'd missed his chance. He'd been sure Orso would be out of his depth with soldiers in the field, that he'd be weak and cowardly and desperate to concede to anything. But the man couldn't have looked more relaxed. You had to admire his nerve. Anyone would have thought he was the one with the numbers. So, and Orso tossed his spoon into his empty bowl, if I replace my closed council with your chosen men, I get to stay king? I honestly don't enjoy it, but all my crockery has little crowns on and so forth. Changing everything would be... He glanced at his strange little waiter. She puffed out her cheeks as she filled his glass again. Bloody nightmare.
We're not usurpers, grumbled Leo. We're patriots, yes, of course, said Orso. But I'm not sure you've thought this all the way through. Once the troops go home, what's to stop me changing my mind?
Leo had tended to leave the thinking through to Durand and Savine and his mother, and none of them was there. He frowned and said nothing. I'm sure your friend Lord Isha has thought it through. He's not a man to underplan, eh? We both know all that nonsense with Wetterlant was entirely his design.
How do you mean?
Muttered Leo, feeling as if he was blundering into a trap, but unable to stop himself. He came to me, Isha, offering to heal the wounds between the closed and open councils, to orchestrate a deal that would see Wetterlant imprisoned, the commoners satisfied, the noblemen mollified, and me looking like a masterful statesman. Orso snorted. I should have known. Any plan intended to make me look good has to be doomed. Ah, fish. Orso's blonde-haired girl came out of nowhere and whisked a steaming plate in front of Leo.
Berniel really does work magic with seafood.
Orso twirled a fork around between his fingers.
She's more sorceress than cook, even in a farmhouse kitchen. No, it's the small cutlery, Leo. What was I saying?
Wetterlant and Isha, said Corporal Tunney.
Ah, yes. I went into the Lord's Round that day, expecting to emerge just yet merciful. Imagine my dismay when I ended up the epitome of an idiotic tyrant. But then, spare a thought for Wetterlant.
He forked up a chunk of fish and chewed with great relish.
He was left dangling, literally. I couldn't even make a clean job of that. Quite the ugly scene. I bloody hate hangings. Still, I'll confess I don't miss the man, an utterly loathsome specimen and guilty as the plague. So much for the good graces of Lord Isha, eh? He loves to play the peacemaker, but he's been sowing discord this whole time. I dare say he's the one who sold this little package to you first, told you Wetterlant was wronged and I was a monster. Men of quality.
And he shook his head and chuckled. Leo frowned, fork frozen halfway to his mouth. He'd been rather pleased with how he'd done the righteous anger, but now he wasn't enjoying himself at all. Talking to Orso was like talking to Jappo Mercato, but with higher stakes and lower hopes of success. All his firm reasons, his noble certainties, his staunch alliances, seemed to be crumbling like castles made of sand.
I don't know what story you've been told about reform and freeing me from my chains and blah, 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 but I'm quite certain Isha means to replace me entirely, probably with you. Not sufficiently glorious to make a good puppet, is he? But I dare say he imagines he could pull the strings skilfully enough. And then, of course, there is your wife.
Leo forced the words through gritted teeth.
Leave her out of this. Please. No one has a higher opinion of Savine than I do.
Orso gave a sad little sigh, staring off into the middle distance. I've been in love with a woman for years, in spite of my best efforts. But I don't think it's unfair to say she's just... And he held up finger and thumb with a hair's breadth between them. A teensy bit ambitious.
I wouldn't put money on great Juvens if he came between her and what she wanted. I never imagined she would be able to resist being queen. That's why I was so surprised that she turned me down.
That she... what?
When I proposed to her.
Leo just managed to stop himself giving a strangled squawk. If he'd been floundering in the conversation before, he was drowning in it now. Clearly, his wife hadn't shared the whole truth when it came to her relationship with the king. What else might she have kept from him? A bolt of lightning could have struck me no more forcefully than when she said no, mused Orso, chopping at his fish with the side of his fork. But perhaps she found another way to make herself queen. I hear she is with you on campaign. She always did like to keep a close eye on her investments.
You've got it all wrong,
growled Leo, wondering if he actually had it all right. His chair shrieked on the stone-flagged floor as he stood, and he had to smother a gasp at the stab of pain in his leg.
We've nothing more to discuss.
But we've still got the main course.
It's liver, said Hildy.
Ah,
then Neil does it, so it just...
And Orso closed his eyes, touched his lips, and let his fingers flutter gently off.
Melts away to nothing, you know.
He opened his eyes and smiled.
Like excuses for rebellion.
You mind if I... Hildy was already poised over Leo's half-eaten fish with a fork in her hand.
Have at it, he snarled as he turned for the door. I'll see you on the battlefield.
Orso almost choked on his wine.
Bloody hell, I hope not.